So I'm here with James Dapperci, a founder of his own law firm, Graviman, social media aficionado, coffee in a case note, Spooko, the Nightmare Method, a couple of podcasts as well. And he's here to talk to me about the creative process. So thanks for coming on, James.
Jacob, thanks for having me. No Snapchat questions. Don't know anything about
Hey,
it.
but in future, maybe. Look, so I'd like to start with, who is your audience when you're making a coffee in a case note, do you think?
I'm thinking work stuff for coffee in a case note. And so sometimes I'm thinking work stuff and I'm like, here's a really technical chat about a fiddly area of the law. And sometimes I'm thinking work stuff because some of the accountants or lawyers who send work to me, they also enjoy coffee on the weekends. They also used to listen to rap music in their teens. They also enjoy, having a chat about strange, trends in haircuts that look a bit weird or whatever strange personal views I might have. So coffee in a case note, I tend to be in sort of work mode, but there's a playful edge to it as
Yeah,
well.
definitely. And so when you're doing those other sort of podcast projects with Tom, like Spooko and the Nightmare Method, what's sort of your audience there or your approach?
This sounds really weird and strange to say. It's not quite a character, but when I'm in a creative process with Tom, with Shag, he and I have been making stuff together for 25
Oh, yeah.
years. And there's a degree where I lean into not quite a character, but I sort of indulge marginally more playful, marginally more kind of extreme in one view, edges of my personality. I'm a little more bombast, a little more confrontation, but it's very much an extension of some of the ways I'm happy to show up in my sort of coffee in a case note work kind of stuff as well. Jacob, it's an awful buzzword. I'm sorry to use it. Authenticity
Authenticity.
tends to dominate my thoughts on both, but there's just a little, just authenticity plus 10%
Yeah, okay.
dominates those other projects, I think.
So I noticed when I watch a coffee in a case note as a law student myself, the thing that you do best is you get this sort of difficult, sort of maybe technical Corporations Act sort of case, and you break it down really well. You speak like colloquially, really engagingly. So I was wondering what your top tip for someone when they wanted to communicate a complex concept to an audience is.
This is awful advice to give, Jacob. You've got to understand it yourself. And once you get it yourself, you can then communicate about it. If you don't get it, you're going to need more words than if you do get it. And the longer this question gets, the less convincing I sound. So you've got to understand it yourself first. And I like to think that they're concepts that I do understand. And so if I'm right about that, then hopefully I'm competent at communicating them too.
Yeah, definitely. And then when you're on the sort of more let's I like I would like to label them the more creative, let your inner self
Yeah,
out
you're
podcast.
my freak flag.
Yeah, exactly. And do you find that you sort of transfer those skills between the two sort of sides of the project?
It's interesting. There's a risk I actually find in the more freak flag, sort of exciting creative projects that you're sort of like, oh, where do these weird cliches about this strange version of me end and where does the actual me begin? People have raised that I get into a lot of beefs. Like I just get into a lot of arguments with people. And Jacob, you and I haven't discussed this a lot before, but I used to make rap music growing up and go in rap battles. And so there's like a confrontational edge to the
Oh,
way
okay,
I
that's
kind of
interesting.
bring content into the world sort of sometimes permeates. And I'm like, yeah, other podcasts, come fucking find us and like, and then we'll see who's the real podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
That kind of energy sometimes
So
comes out of
you've
it.
been in, let's say, doing creative endeavors for a long time, right? We talk about your rap battles when you were Peach. How do you think that those skills have transferred sort of from that earlier creative process to these latter sort of videos?
I like to think so, yeah. There's a degree of getting to know how your own brain works and of trying to respond to inputs. So there's your classic junior lawyer story of, oh, it's scary to stand in front of a judge. Yeah, it is scary. But some of my background, I made radio for a number of years. Some of my background allows me to kind of keep the how does this appear externally thought process separate from the blind panic of how do I assemble my thoughts, and convey this fairly technical intellectual concept. So I think I have the privilege of having in my CV creative endeavors that involve that thought processing at reasonable high speed sort of background.
So you mentioned that you like to sort of grab a hold of your brain and reflect on that process. I'd like to dive a little bit more into that if we could. When you're creating, like, let's just use coffee in a case note because, that's this sort of law you know, mix up. When you're from woe to go, what are you doing with coffee in a case note?
Step one, read a case.
Yeah.
And that's literally what it sounds like. So in my area of law, judges are handing out judgments really often. And so I'll sit down and read one of them that I think's interesting from the last 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, make myself some notes. And that's often my deep thinking process, because if it's a judgment of, you know, over 50 pages or over 200 or 300 paragraphs, the kind of having read those 10 paragraphs, what's the one sentence that really sums up what's going on?
Yeah.
That to me is the most complex, I was going to say creative work. I suppose one way of looking at it is interpretive work.
Yeah, yeah.
Like to try to squeeze these concepts down into what's the real heart of what's going on here. Mm. And then having done that hard processing work or interpretive work, I then find the next phase of the project where I head into a cafe, hold up the phone and say, hi there, here's what the plaintiff said, here's what the defendant said, here's what the judge said, thanks for joining me.
Yep.
Because I've done that understanding work previously, I find that delivery work or performance work or whatever we call it, video work, to flow a little more naturally, because those thoughts have often crystallized in my head. And it's then a matter of, well, having got these crystallized thoughts, how do I spin them around and communicate them into the little black dot on my phone?
Yeah. So there's that lot of like grunt work, thinking work at the sort of start. Then when you, well, let's talk about the nitty gritty, maybe the technical side.
Mm.
What sort of equipment are you using, for example?
A 4.5-year-old iPhone that has 3 cameras in it. I know we've got the 2 camera ones here that I think are more recent than my one. A tripod I bought from eBay. Mm-hmm. Those Rode lapel mics. Yep.
Got a couple of those over there.
Yeah, no, okay. La di da. That's it.
Yeah.
Then Final Cut Pro on my computer.
Oh, yeah, so editing.
Yeah.
So when you're editing, do you find yourself cutting out much? Or?
Never. No. My whole view is there's this Lil Wayne mixtape from about 2005, or maybe slightly later, maybe about 2008, 2009, where he starts off one of his verses. He says, I'm one take Timmy, give me a Grammy, an Oscar and an Emmy. And I like to think I'm a one take Timmy as well. And you sort of accept the errors that come with that, right? Yep. So I'll be summarizing a case and sometimes I'll say shareholder when I mean director. Sometimes I'll say plaintiff when I mean defendant. And these kind of mistakes are cooked into the creative method I use, that is that it's more about producing something and getting it out than it is about endlessly refining. And so my creative process is a lot about iteration, and then reflect on the iteration and then iterate again, rather than take your first draft and then refine it infinitely into its final form.
Well, that's great. You've sort of played me a nice soft hand, because we talk about iteration a lot in class.
Oh, Jacob, I'm paying attention.
So in this iteration process,
how
do you sort of determine what to do next? What are you looking at?
Yeah. I form the view that it's done. I form the view that the moment I finished recording the video, whatever it was is what it was.
Yep.
And that's the end of the reflection, really, for me.
Yep.
We then edge into the awful grunt work. I still type my own captions, because I'm yet to find a piece of editing software that makes captions that I like and then has the advantage of AI doing a reasonable job, which it does do a reasonable job of predicting the captions. So I'm still in my very 2016 era of hand typing, awful posture, hunchback captions, hoping to evolve from that sometime soon, but we'll see. And so to the extent the work is a creative one, my view is that the muse stops visiting the moment I end the recording session on the video. But to the view, it is a creative one in the genuine sense of pushing something out into the world and seeing what people think. It's almost that editing caption process that takes up a surprising and irritating amount of time.
So when you are – so you obviously hold a very public-facing image, and these videos go out publicly, and I notice that you are very good at responding to comments. Do you find yourself, like, say, on a certain, like, maybe just generally a social media post that you put out, reading the comments and going, oh, in future, I'm going to steer away from making a post like this, or the opposite, I'm going to lean into something like that?
I tend to police myself earlier than that.
Yeah. So, like, what you said about the camera's off, you're done.
Yes. Okay. That's precisely as you say.
Yeah.
So, most of the how will this be received work is done at the phase where I'm choosing what case to read.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I'm never going to read a case that I'm like, and here's what this says about dad's rights of access to children, because publishing something like that online will get all the worst sort of fuckwits out and commenting on.
Inflammatory, very.
Yes, precisely so. And so that issue is almost dealt with for me at a pre-creation stage, at a pre-interpretation stage, so that what I'm pushing out into the marketplace, there's only so many comments that can be offered, and I'm prepared to embrace anything in that spectrum of comments, and I'm not really going to get anything outside. And if I do, I'll either just be mean to them or delete them, either of which is fine.
Yeah, and I think that really shines through, and I think it links to that earlier concept, and you said buzzword before, of authenticity, right? Like, it doesn't matter what others are saying, or the audience, for example. You know what good content is, and you've obviously have success. And
can I pause you there?
Of course.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I know what creating things that please me are.
Yep.
And I don't know what good content is.
Yep.
But the view I take is that anyone who's creating anything really needs to scratch their own itch, and that's stealing a Gary Vaynerchuk line, really needs to scratch their own itch first, because if you don't give a fuck about what you're making and pushing into the marketplace, why would I?
Mm.
And then let's say you've made something that doesn't speak to your soul, but it's very popular. Well, you're unlikely to be able to duplicate that effort and iterate again, because you're already stepping outside of your authentic creative spirit. So I try to embrace making stuff that pleases me, including business-related, you know, marketing content that pleases me, that I'm happy to stand behind. And from there, saying, I'll just let the chips fall where they may.
I think that's a great piece of advice as well. I think that in my experience, in my university degree, doing whatever I've been doing, if you don't have a passion for something, you're not going to persist at it. And a good thing is consistency as well, especially on social media. So like, if I'm doing, you know, something I don't really care about, I can't think of an example, but then, you know, you're not going to put the effort in, and you're not going to want to do it next week or whatever. Do you collaborate much in your creative process? I know that you used to have an editor or someone that helped you put together your intro, for example. How much does collaboration play into your process?
Zero.
Zero.
My collaborator is a guy called Adam Dunn, who I try to do the opposite of collaboration, because he's a professional editor and like cinematographer for like television and film. And so my view is, I'll just do precisely what you say, and then accept the outcome of that with gratitude. And then for the balance, I will read precisely the case I want to read, and all that sort of thing. So the collaboration I've done with Adam is deeply satisfying, because we've had sort of two sessions in about 5 years, each of which were about an hour and a half long, of him filming me a few shots around Sydney. And that's the extent of the process.
Okay.
And I then get to take the benefit of his wonderful efforts, and that sort of continues to recur.
Yeah.
But collaboration in my coffee and a case note, sort of law-related, business-related stuff, is zero. Collaboration in Spooko and the Nightmare Method is massive.
Yeah.
And it's very much about trying to be complementary. Complementary? The one where you do some and then I fit in the gaps. I've forgotten which complementary that is. But my co-host, Tom McMullen, or Shag, is immensely creative, in that he is so good at coming up with ideas and bringing them to life. And the rhythm that we've got into over years and years and years hosting radio together, and including in these podcasts, is, whether healthy or otherwise, I tend to think of myself as a bit of a Tinkerbell, kind of sprinkle a bit of fairy dust, make a couple of comments, try to bring a bit of energy, try to bring a fairly unique way of thinking about whatever topic we're thinking about.
Mm.
And so the collaboration point is one that I've taken a fairly long time to make peace with, because he does literally more work, literally, in a very literal sense.
Yeah.
So Spooko, for example, is a horror film podcast. Yeah. He'll watch it, which I won't. He'll edit it afterwards, which I won't. And I'll show up on a Zoom call for 50 minutes, 55 minutes.
Yeah.
He's got a wonderful family. He's got a challenging job. And in a universe where he and I are iterating this thing week on week on week on week on week on week, he's doing literally more.
Yeah.
And there's a degree of guilt that attaches to that.
There always is, I think.
And I've just tried to embrace it and accept the benefit of it for what it is, and enjoy the really fulfilling experience of making it with him.
And there's something there as well about recognizing where you are strong and where someone else is strong as well. Like you said, Tom's great creatively, you know, and he likes to do this work.
Yes.
And comes to idea and bring it to fruition as well. I think there's something powerful in being able to step back and say, okay, Tom's good at this, let him do that.
Well, the interesting thing is, he's great at ideation and execution.
Okay.
Right? So he's a triple threat, or he's an all-star, or whatever we want to
say. The whole process.
Yeah. And so I see it very much as my role to almost sort of administer that. So to get into your Simon and Garfunkel or your Neptunes example, Jacob, you're too young to remember. Do you remember the Neptunes?
No, I got Simon and Garfunkel, but not the Neptunes.
Okay, the Neptunes is, oh my God, what's the name of the happy guy? Yeah, Pharrell Williams.
Oh, Pharrell Williams.
And this guy called Chad Hugo.
Okay.
Right, and Pharrell, I think you and I might agree, sort of has his finger on the pulse of pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
And from time to time came up with a sort of defining beat or a defining song that sort of came from somewhere. Probably the clips as Hell Hath No Fury is probably the peak of that. And for better or worse, we tend to associate Pharrell with these spike-like pop culture moments where we go, wow, like this guy is an exciting person who's creating things that are evocative in the culture. And Chad Hugo is also a part of the group. Presumably he does something in the background.
Yep.
And I almost think of me and Shag similarly in that Shag is very much our Pharrell, and that whatever I manage to do to kind of help Pharrell be Pharrell, help Shag to keep creating these amazing things,
yep,
I consider to be sort of part of it. And so there's a degree where I just don't want to break the spell and I just want to come in and do my Chad Hugo or my Art Garfunkel stuff. And let Paul Simon and Pharrell sort of take the driver's the driver's seat.
Yeah, awesome. And that's great to see the sort of dual ways that you work, both in your Coffee and a Case Note project and when you are, you know, trying to support Tom, or, you know, if you want to call it support, in those more creative endeavors.
Co-create or support, yeah, or whatever. I'm trying to be kinder to myself,
yeah,
Jacob, about doing literally less work.
Yeah.
And it's a funny process to go through, but I get to sit here and take the benefit of being involved in my two favorite podcasts.
Exactly, and they are great podcasts. So you came here today and I mentioned that I'm doing law and comms and media.
Yeah.
Very interesting mix.
Mm.
I was wondering, and this might be a bit of a lowball question to you, do you think that there is a possible synergy between law and social media, or do you think that they're two worlds that are destined to remain apart?
I think they must be a synergy. When we say social media, what we really mean is the contemporary version of the internet,
yeah,
right? Pretty much the locations online that we go to. Law is something that happens in society, and so wherever society goes, the law must apply. And so to the extent our lives move increasingly towards Web 3.0 or, you know, the new media, as it used to be called 15 years ago, or social media as it called 5 years ago, or whatever term we want to use for our increasingly internet-based lives, the law will be there. So right choice of degree. I hosted a radio show all through studying law, so I'm down for media and law being combined, Jacob. It gets my two thumbs up and it's a good way to do two different ways for your brain to work,
yes,
at about the same time.
Yeah.
Law in practice is so much about communication, including understanding and processing communication, mm-hmm, right? So you want to be able to understand things that are said and written to you, and you want to make yourself understandable promptly. So you want to know how to use certain media, including the medium of, you know, email, letter, whatever.
Yeah.
So having a mastery of the way society currently functions and insights into that, alongside with the black letter law, is a kitchen nightmare. It's a kitchen dream. It's
perfect.
It's a good outcome.
Yeah. Okay, and then finally, so the brief for my subject this year is making kinship in the Anthropocene. And we're at the end of the semester, we're going to be doing a live streamed event is sort of the task. That's an exhibition of what we've done over the semester towards this idea. You don't have to come up with any ideas about the sort of prompt.
That's a Shag job. Yeah,
yeah, like, exactly. Like,
yeah, yeah, he can do that. Yeah, yeah.
But I just am interested to see like where you'd start sort of addressing a task given, if you were given that task and sort of what you do with it.
I guess the view I'd take, it sort of builds on the answer to the previous question of not so much how are things revolutionary and crazy now. It would be like how much have things stayed the same, and trying to track traditions that might sometimes be ascribed to the distant past, to try to track through to what extent is Twitter, is X actually a town square?
Yeah.
You know, to what extent are the interactions we have with our grandparents on Facebook Messenger a current iteration of a tradition previously? So when we talk about, oh, wow, everything's so new and crazy, in one view, that's interesting. The thing that I think interests me more is how is this an echo of what has come before? So if I was trying to tackle kinship, how do we relate to each other, is how I read that.
Yeah, yeah.
Contemporary kinship, what I would be reflecting on is, how do things stay the same? For me, it always comes down to cricket clubs for some reason, Jacob. And
I'm soccer clubs, so I'm the same.
Lovely. And so we cast back 30 years and we say a lot of your and my social life might have been through the cricket club, and a lot of the voluntary work we do in the community might have been through the soccer club and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And to kind of reflect on, well, where do community clubs and associations now find themselves? Where do those relationships in that third place? You know, you got work, you got home, you got your third place, like church for some people who are religious or whatever it might be. How does the contemporary world we live in deal with the third place issue, third place problem that I think we had pretty well solved a generation ago? That interests me.
And to put you on the spot, you're asked to do a live stream event.
Yep.
What's the sort of nitty gritty process you're running through to sort of maybe ideate about how that's going to look, or how would you deliver it?
Well, whenever I live screen, I try to leverage it. It's live stream. I try to leverage it heavily. So firstly, you've got your laptop sitting here on the table. That you're going to use StreamYard, so you're going to do Facebook, Instagram. Sorry, I'll withdraw that. Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. You're going to live stream that there from your computer. You're going to set one phone up here next to the computer, very, very close to this camera, so that when you're making eye contact with one, you'll make eye contact with the other, so that you're live. You're going live on Instagram. Then over here, if you've got more than 1,000 followers on TikTok, you'll have another phone with that account open right here, so that you're making eye contact with your simultaneously with TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. That way you're leveraging your time. It's a live stream event on 5 different platforms. Come on down. Let's do it.
Yeah. And I really like, I've watched some of your live streams before about corporate oppression. I love how you also, maybe towards the end of maybe a stream, you'll engage with the audience. Do you think that's important? Because as someone in the media or working in the media, or if you want to call it social media, we're always trying to toe the line between sort of experience and media, right? Trying to, do you think that that's an important aspect of producing live content?
I think it's a decision to be made by each creator.
Yes, for sure.
I'm finding this a really useful conversation to understand my own process. I work better prompted.
Okay.
Right? So I find that very energizing and exciting to have someone say, well, why do you say that of what you just mentioned? And so I can go, aha, the reason I used that term, or the reason I raised this example, or whatever it is, great, let's get into it. Let's get into the nitty gritty. I think my genuine answer to that is a creator by creator question. So there are some people who might have a bit of a shtick, and sorry, I don't say that critically, that they say, I want to get through my stuff, and then I'll turn my attention to your stuff. Okay. I'll hold your questions to the end.
Yep.
I take the opposite view. I'm more excited to have that kind of back and forth, have it rolling along. And even as you guys are live streaming, you're going to have someone join the TikTok and join the Instagram. You might say, hey, everyone on Instagram, everyone on TikTok, double tap your screen so I can see some love hearts, and like send this link to your mates. And like, we'd love to hear if you've got any questions, and so you can invite that engagement. I find that kind of thing energizing, but I know there are others who find that kind of distracting of like, no, I'm here to just live deliver something that might otherwise be a recording. To me, it's that interplay that makes a live event exciting.
And I think that really comes through with that back and forth element you're talking about really comes through with what you do with Tom as well. And it's a similar way that I work. But I think we'll wrap up there. Thank you, James, for coming on and giving me a bit of insight into your creative process.
Lovely. And to anyone watching or listening, Jacob said before he was going to have his first try at freestyle rapping at the end of the interview. It's and a one, and a two, and a one,
my
two,
name
three.
Is Jacob, and I...
Thanks for having me, Jacob. Appreciate it.
Thank you.